The one question everybody has is health. Is it simple? Is it complex? Is it confusing? Sure seems that way many times. We're going to try and see if we can make health simplified by giving you some health simple guide to a healthier life with the man who is spending his whole career working on that topic. Still spending. Yeah. Dr. Justin, welcome here. We're going to do first names here today.
Sounds good.
So who'd you bring with you today here?
Paul, I have Kelly McCann. She's a doctor in the area here, and I'm going to read a little intro for her because it's pretty extensive. So Dr. McCann is a board-certified physician. She specializes in functional, integrative, and environmental medicine at the Spring Center in Costa Mesa, California. She holds an MD from Tulane University, completed dual residencies in internal medicine and pediatrics, and is one of only 35 physicians worldwide selected for the prestigious Integrative Medicine Fellowship at the University of Arizona under Dr. Andrew Weil. She's board certified by the Institute of Functional Medicine and the American Board of Physician Specialties in Integrative Medicine. Dr. McCann also earned a master's in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. She serves on the board of directors for both the American Academy of Environmental Medicine and the International Society for Environmentally Acquired Illness. Dr. McCann lectures internationally on mast cell activation syndrome, mold and mycotoxin illness, Lyme disease, and environmental toxicity. She is the creator of the Unforgetting Project, a healing approach that views symptoms as biological signals rather than malfunctions, integrating the mind-body-spirit connection in chronic illness recovery. Does that cover it?
She sounds very impressive.
She's amazing. We should have her on.
Oh, thank you. I think so. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you for coming on. I'm really excited. We talked about earlier, I've seen several of your patients. Mm-hmm. They all have extreme emotions about you. I've had several that literally tear up at what you've done for them. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
So with all this education you've had and in varied aspects of things that are a little more rare than your typical medical doctor would have, what drove you to seek alternative medicine and integrate that with medicine?
I didn't go into medicine with the traditional idea. I didn't grow up as a little kid with my stethoscope intending to be a doctor. I studied music at Brown University was an opera singer, and that was going to be my life.
That's amazing.
Right? And then about the time that I was supposed to decide what I wanted to do, was in my senior year of college, I thought, you know what? I don't love that enough to really want to make that my passion, my mm-hmm. career. And so I shift gears, and it took me a little while, little bumps in the road, a master's in library science, going back and doing all that pre-med. And along the way, I'd met an acupuncturist. He was my mentor in meditation classes. And I just realized that I wanted to do things differently. I didn't want to do a conventional training. I actually wanted to go to acupuncture school. And my parents thought, well, you should really try and go to medical school. And I said, okay, I'll make a deal with myself and with you guys that if I get in, I'll go to medical school. And if I don't, I'll go to acupuncture school. I got into 4 medical schools.
Wow, that's impressive. I know how hard it is because I have some pretty smart friends that did not get in. So,
yeah, so maybe it was different at that point in the world. But I got into 4 schools and I was like, okay, I got to uphold the deal I made with myself. So off I went to Tulane. And I was always seeking the ways that I could broaden my experience. And so I started a student group for holistic medicine. I found a medical acupuncturist who I could study with. I took Reiki classes and healing touch classes. I just knew that I needed to do more than the traditional training. So I already had an orientation that was mm-hmm. at odds with many of my colleagues. Mm-hmm. It was a little kooky. And even when I went to residency training, again, I found another acupuncturist that I could study with. And so I always knew I needed to do something more that was more holistic for the patients. It wasn't just about finding the diagnosis and giving the medication. Mm-hmm. It was really about understanding who they were. And one of the aha moments for me was when I realized that Western medicine doesn't ask why. What is the question that burns all patients? What is the question that keeps them up at night? Why is this happening to me? There's no there's no question like that in the paradigm of Western medicine. And it's the question that every patient wants an answer to. Of course, I had to keep searching for how to help them answer that question. What is it that is unique about people? Their genetics, their environment, their lifestyle, their choices, their family unit, their trauma. And that just kept the ball rolling for all of these educational opportunities I had in my life so that I could really be of most service to people.
That's really cool. And back to the Andrew Weil part, I was impressed that you were a practitioner that worked under him and learned from him. To read one of his books a long time ago when I was like 20. What led you to or created that situation?
So that at that time, that was really the primary program for learning integrative medicine. And I had done my residency training in Phoenix, so I was very familiar with Arizona and had read his books too. And so it just was a no-brainer to me. I started practicing in Oregon immediately after residency and actually got sick myself. I developed chronic fatigue, depression, and fibromyalgia. Hint, it was the mold, but I didn't know it at the time.
Oh, wow.
And I knew that I really wanted to fully steep myself in integrative medicine. While I was in Oregon, I was also studying medical acupuncture with the UCLA Helms course for physicians. So I was learning traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture for physicians. And I felt finally free from residency training, having graduated, that I just knew I had to go and study with Andrew Weil. And it was such a cool program. There were four of us in that year. And we got to work directly with him and many of the other folks at the University of Arizona. Every day was a lecture, and then we would have clinic. And it was just so wonderful to add more tools to the toolkit. Nutrition, we learned about Ayurveda, we learned about chiropractic. We would have case studies where we would have a board of people representing a variety of different modalities. We would have shamans and different spiritual counselors in this group, in this big room, and we would present cases to them as the fellows, and each of the people would give us input on the patients and what we might do to help them. So our treatment plans for these patients were like pages and pages long because it was input from all of the different providers and modalities.
It's amazing. Really a little different than here's a prescription, why don't you take these pills for a while and mask your symptoms.
Exactly. You know, like, completely opposite.
That's amazing. Was that something that came out of, so as far as you seeking that, was there some specific moment within that maybe that was your path, or you pretty much knew by then it was?
I knew that was the path. Let's be honest, I had to take a tremendous pay cut in order to do that. Mm-hmm. So when you're training as a resident, at the time, I think I was, a PGY-5, had done 4 years in medicine and pediatrics. So now I'm like level 5. I still probably only made $22,000 a year.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it was a huge sacrifice.
Yeah. Worked at Starbucks and made more, probably.
Probably. And I had to moonlight and I flew up to Oregon. I would moonlight there in order to.
So you sacrificed a lot to
I sacrificed
to do that.
A tremendous amount. Yeah.
So now so if you look at your patients now and they come in and we look at a typical assessment that like an MD might do versus what you do, what does that look like as far as what are you looking at?
So I'm looking at not just the symptoms that they're showing up with, but I'm looking at the history. The answers are really in the story the patients tell so much more than we give it credit. But we have to understand how to ask the right questions and how to provide the space to give the details. So I'm looking for where did they grow up? What kind of circumstances did they grow up in? When did the symptoms start for them? What was the order of the symptom progression? What are all the symptoms now? And then usually by this point in my career, people have seen a dozen, two dozen, three dozen other doctors or providers looking for help and assistance. And so I'm looking at everything else that's been done and seeing what are the pieces that have been missing, what are the things that the patients don't yet understand about what's going on with them? And then what are the potential root causes from a functional medicine perspective that could be going on with them that are leading to the wide variety of symptoms that they have?
Yeah. So just imagining someone coming to see you and then going to see another MD, one thing I'm thinking of, you're spending a lot of time in that first assessment. Like, you're actually listening to the patient.
Yes.
They're telling their story.
Yes.
So that connection is probably huge in itself. And then you guys have a much better rapport than a typical doctor would have. So that must, I'm sure that's part of the value, is you're actually listening to the patient.
Yes. And in times past, I had them fill out their paperwork ahead of time. It was a 25-page intake form.
Gosh, yeah.
And I would also ask them to write out their stories. I've had a couple paragraphs. I've had pages and pages. I've had people write 10, 20, 10, 15 pages. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Of it must be story.
Like cathartic for them in some ways.
So cathartic for them.
Yeah.
And these are people who have had to tell their stories again and again and again. And they walk into my office and I've read the story and have had some of them respond and say, I've actually never had anybody read the whole thing.
Or take it seriously as something that might actually be contributing to their current state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very powerful beginning. And then, I don't know, I've figured out how to tease out and see what's going on with people in a relatively short period of time. So, and I'm not perfect, of course. Nobody's perfect. But it's much clearer to me what we need to do next. And some of that's what's most troubling to you. Is it your brain fog? Is it your fatigue? Or is it your indigestion? And then we go after that.
And so I'm sure some is overlap in terms of the benefit. One, you clear up one and the other gets a little better, I'm sure.
Of course, yeah. That's the starting point, right? So whenever I'm listening to somebody, I want to hear, what are your symptoms? What are the things that are most distressing for you? Because I want to help you fix them, because you're coming to me to help you with that.
Right.
And if I don't listen and help you prioritize and put your priorities
kind of like in
top of mind, then I'm doing you a disservice. So I have to do that. And then I have to take those symptoms and that priority and then figure out what are the root causes that are most likely contributing to those symptoms.
Very cool. So we have some people that are probably like practitioners, like physical therapists, chiropractors, other people that might be listening. For those professionals, what kinds of symptoms or things that your patients might tell you would lead me to think, oh, I'm thinking of Dr. McCann right now to send you to? Like, what about their presentation would make me think it's more like either a mast cell type thing or environmental toxicity versus just like an orthopedic condition or some other condition that's just treated by a physical therapist or someone?
Sure. Usually if they have a longer list of symptoms, so they may be coming to the practitioner for hands-on work for a specific issue, but in the history you find out what they also have these additional symptoms. And particularly with mast cell activation syndrome, it's a hypersensitivity syndrome. Mm-hmm. And so they are going to present with numerous symptoms, multiple symptoms in multiple systems. That's really the definition of inflammatory, allergic, or, you know, growth kinds of things, because there's growth hormones that are also released by mast cells. So if people say, oh yeah, I tend to make cysts, I tend to make like lipomas, and I'm really allergic, and I have brain fog and fatigue and joint pain and indigestion and interstitial cystitis and migraines, start thinking this person is super inflamed, they likely have mast cell.
So any one of those things, you'd be like, maybe. But if it's multiple things,
you're
saying?
At least three.
Okay.
At least three systems being involved. People who are on antihistamines. And
That makes sense.
That's usually, they're self-medicating for a reason. People who have a lot of allergies, meaning drug allergies. So if on your intake form, they were allergic to this antibiotic and that antibiotic and this antidepressant. Oftentimes, they're not allergies to the medications. They're sensitivities to the inactive ingredients in those medications.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
But they don't know that necessarily.
Yeah, who would? So as far as if we're looking at the environmental part of it, what are the prime players in terms of things that people have in their homes or something like that that you would consider as dangerous for people? Or
one of the biggest ones is honestly mold. Nobody wants to hear that they have mold in their house ever, especially if you're a fastidious house cleaner or house owner. You don't want to believe that. Unfortunately, I've lived in, I don't know, 13 homes in Orange County since I moved here.
Oh my gosh.
I moved a lot.
Sounds like a hobby.
Not a hobby I would recommend. Good for purging periodically, oh my gosh, but yeah, seriously. Terrible hobby. Almost every single one of those homes has been moldy.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. Because, yeah, you think of California, you think of, I don't know, places back east where it's desert. Wet a lot, or like in Seattle maybe, but that's crazy. Wow.
Yes. There are a couple of reasons for that. One, I don't think that there's as much conscientiousness in building because it's sunny and 70 all the time. Mm. We don't have to have too much insulation. We don't have to have whatever. So that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem tends to be that we love our lawns and our flowers and our bushes to look like the East Coast or West, but this is a desert. And so we have sprinkler systems, and oftentimes those sprinkler systems will hit the homes.
Oh, good point.
Or there'll be extra moisture in the slab. And if any part of the wood or the sheetrock hits the slab, it acts like a wick. Mm-hmm. So the moisture will wick right up from a constantly moist slab or be in the wall. And when you have wood and paper, which is what we build with, and water, that equals mold.
That's crazy. Yeah. You really don't think about it. I think of like maybe down by the ocean, maybe it would happen, but I don't think about like somewhere like where I live as having those kind of issues.
Before we go on, a couple more thoughts about environmental exposures in the home. So some of the other potential issues are many of the building materials, unless you're working with a biologist or a building, let's say, or a home builder who has experience with building green homes and building healthy homes. Mm-hmm. Many of the materials are very toxic too. Some of the glues and the foams that we use for insulation have flame retardants in them, amongst other chemicals. And then there's the world of plastic. And many of the plastic particles from all of our belongings, our kids' toys, our clothing that's made of polyester, when we wash it, when we dry it, the particles end up in the dust. And unfortunately, plastics and the chemicals that accompany those plastics then are so small, they're microplastics, they're nanoplastics, and we inhale them, we eat them, and
there's PFAS, is that
right? There.
Okay.
These are plastics. So it's usually phthalates and parabens, which we think of as being transitory kinds of chemicals, but if you have actually the particles themselves, the tiny particles of plastic, the nanoplastics can go all the way into the brain. The microplastics can be everywhere else in the body too. The testes, the placenta, if you're pregnant, everywhere. They're everywhere in the blood vessels. And there's not any real great ways to get them out.
Wow.
That we have. You can't take cilantro and hope it's going to
chelation either for that kind of thing.
Well, chelation is for metals.
For metals, I know.
So chelation is for metals. So there's not a lot of good things. You can't really sweat them out. Not when they're particles that are lodged in your tissues. Mm. I'm glad that you brought off the PFASs because those are called perfluorinates or perfluorocarbons. Those don't break down either. Mm. And they are the things in Teflon, all of our flame retardant furniture, curtains, clothing, and those break down as well. They also get into the dust. They also get into the water system. And there is no way, short of plasmapheresis, of getting those out of the body.
Oh, wow.
And even then, just like with the particles, if they're that deeply embedded and they're not close to the blood vessels, they're staying
put. You can't get them out. Yeah.
You can't get them out. So what we need to do is really make sure that we're filtering our water with a high-quality filter, and we're filtering our air, and we're vacuuming our dust. We're getting the dust out, and we're avoiding tracking more things in. So wearing slippers instead of shoes in the house. So just a few tidbits on how to really protect yourself and your family.
Wow. So maybe we'll hit one more topic here as far as
gut health.
How does this play? I know talk about the gut-brain connection and everything. How does that play into all this as well?
So the gut is, and that's where we nourish ourselves. That's where our immune system gets to see what we're nourishing ourselves with. And so there's a single layer of cells between our lumen, right, where the food is, and the immune system. So if we're eating foods that break down, or we're exposed to things that break down the intestinal permeability between those single layer of cells, our immune system is seeing things that it's not supposed to see yet. This is what is called leaky gut, which increased intestinal permeability is the fancy scientific phrase. And the medical community at large doesn't really recognize this as a problem, but it is a problem for many people because environmental chemicals break down the intestinal lining, mold breaks down the intestinal lining, any sort of oxidative stress can break down the intestinal lining. And then if the immune system is getting inflamed on the other side, it too can perpetuate that inflammatory response and break down the intestinal lining. One of the things that a lot of patients are experiencing now is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO.
Or, that's what that is. Okay.
Yeah, SIBO. So we're supposed to have bacteria in our colons. We're not supposed to have bacteria in our small intestines. Not so much anyway. And what happens is that they might not have enough acid to kill off the bacteria and the bacteria that are coming in on the food, or there is not enough peristalsis because of other issues, or there might be ileocecal valve, so some of the colonic bacteria can backflow into the small intestine, and then they have a party and they start flourishing and growing in the small intestines, digesting all the foods that we're eating, causing a whole host of symptoms.
Oh, wow.
Gas, bloating, indigestion, diarrhea, constipation, etc. And they can also impact your mood, and people just feel terrible when they have bacterial overgrowth. Here's the kicker. Most of the time, it's because they're in a moldy environment. They've ingested mold and yeast that sets up the situation in the gastrointestinal tract to allow for bacterial overgrowth, because the mold and the mycotoxins either damage the neurological system, so the autonomic nervous system isn't working properly, because mold and mycotoxins are neurotoxins. And so now somebody has SIBO, they go to their conventional doctor, gastroenterologist will do a breath test, identify, okay, you have SIBO, I'm going to give you 2 weeks of a antibiotic. And then it comes back. All right, that's weird, because the studies tell me that should work. I'm going to give it to you again. And then it comes back. So recurrent SIBO, or recurrent small intestinal fungal overgrowth, that's mold. But conventional medicine doesn't recognize mold as an issue.
You keep treating it, but you're still in the environment. So you're getting it, it stays, or it doesn't go away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah, this is all kinds of stuff that, like, you hear these certain diagnoses, but I have no idea the root cause for it. And sounds like maybe a lot of the medical community doesn't either. Wow. Thank you for being on the cutting edge of that. Hey. I think you've talked through that. I was going to ask you about the disrupting the gut barrier, but you just did that. So as far as going into, like, other ways of treating these issues, what might be some things that you would address this kind of thing for? As far as if you see someone like this, what might be a few things that you would recommend, or is there a way to fix it, or is it?
Sure, there's always a way to fix it. The question is, in what order, so that people can tolerate it? And for me, many of the patients have mast cell activation syndrome also, which, let me explain a little bit about what that is. Mast cells are a normal part of our immune system, and they're related to our red blood cells and our white blood cells. And just like those cells are born in the bone marrow, and then they move to the areas of the periphery where they're standing at the junctions, or they hang out in the junctions between ourselves and the outside world. So they're in our gastrointestinal tract. They're in our upper respiratory tract. They're in our lower respiratory tract. They're in our sinuses. They line the mucous membranes and the bladder. So there's a lot in the mouth, and they line the area between ourselves and the blood-brain barrier, right? Mm-hmm. So they're lining there. They love hanging out near the blood vessels, around little nerves, and their job is to identify if there's a foreign invader, a toxin, mm-hmm. infection, something that they perceive causes a threat to the body. And we want these cells to work, right? When people were initially getting sick with COVID, we heard this cytokine storm concept. Mast cells produce what are called mediators. They're a combination of different chemicals, chemical messengers, and some of them are cytokines, like the cytokines made in the cytokine storm. Chemokines, histamine is an important one, serotonin, heparin. There are probably several hundred, if not a couple thousand,
oh, wow. yeah.
mediators. And every single mast cell in your body is different from every single mast cell in my body. And the mast cells in your gastrointestinal tract are made up of different mediators than the ones in your sinuses, than the ones in your bladder. And they're different from everybody else's. And so the mediators, the constitution of the mast cells, it's unique to you. And what that means is that how your mast cells respond to a threat will be different than how other people's mast cells respond to a threat. And then in a certain genetic percentage of the population, some people are more primed to go into a hypersensitivity reaction or an overactivation of these mast cells. And then the mast cells, they lose their ability to discern what's friend and foe.
Oh, geez.
And so they start dumping their mediators and causing inflammation, even if it's something that should be tolerated.
Oh, wow. It's almost it's autoimmune type of thing, but it's not the immune system?
It is the immune system, but it's not making antibodies against your own self.
Gotcha.
It's causing an inflammatory response that's misperceived as needed. So if I'm exposed to mold, my mast cells will perceive that mold as a foreign invader. But if I'm of that genetic susceptibility, my mast cells might become hypersensitive. And then it starts to be not only react to the mold, it starts to react to my food. It starts to react to chemicals. It starts to react to smells. It starts to react to all sorts of other things. And now I can't eat a variety of different foods. I can't go out and be exposed to EMF or fragrances.
She's
or
hypersensitive
smoke.
To everything.
You could become hypersensitive
wow.
to everything.
That's terrifying. Jeez. So maybe as far as for today, maybe we'll end with this part of the talk. And then I would like to have you back on to talk about other aspects of the treatment you do and then also how the psychology plays into this. In essence, or is there anything that you'd want our listeners to know right now as far as what they should do if they suspect they have something like this going on? And then also, how can they find you?
Thank you. Yeah, I left him on a cliff. I'm so sorry.
Okay. No, it was just how it goes sometimes. Yeah.
It's just how it goes. If you're feeling like you have a lot of symptoms, there is absolutely help. There uh-huh. is absolutely a way through. And I think the most important thing to take away from this conversation is that there is always hope for healing. There's nothing that is irreparable. So that's number one. Number two, if that does resonate with you, there are providers that do understand. And if it works for your listeners, I am in Orange County mm-hmm. at the Spring Center, which is in Costa Mesa, and you can find me at thespringcenter.com. I'm also on social media as Dr. Kelly McCann. And then I also have a new program that we can talk about next time called the Unforgetting Project.
Awesome. Very cool. I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. It's
Thank
been
you.
Fascinating, and I look forward to the future talking to you as well.
Thank you so much,
All
Justin.
Right. You're welcome.
And how do people reach you, Justin?
I'm at Physical Therapy and Balance Centers in Lake Forest.
And spell it?
FYZICAL.
And appearing here on OC Talk Radio.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye, Paul.
Wow, that was a lot of information packed into one period of time. It definitely whets my appetite to hear more. And there's hope. Health can be simplified. There are some simple guides to a healthier life. Join us as we share and explore those right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.